Today's episode is being sponsored by Adolescent Counseling Services, ACS, located in San Mateo County, California. ACS empowers youth in the community to find their way through social-emotional support and by building safe, accepting communities. Founded in 1975, ACS currently implements 4 core programs in Santa Clara and San Mateo County communities. Their community counseling program, which is an outpatient mental health assessment, treatment, and education for teens and their families in the general community and at local Boys and Girls Clubs of the Peninsula. Their Adolescent Substance Addiction Treatment Program, a harm reduction outpatient treatment program. Their Outlet Program, a program serving Bay Area LGBTQ+ teens, families, and supportive allies. And their on-campus counseling program, bilingual, on-site individual, and family counseling. ACS provides Silicon Valley youth with direct and timely access to often life-saving professional mental health services, support, and treatment. Over the past 40 years, the agency has served hundreds of thousands of children and their family members. Adolescent Counseling Service exists to support the well-being of all teens, tweens, and young adults ages 10 to 25 in Santa Clara and San Mateo counties. ACS's network of skilled family therapists and professionally led support groups are resources that youth and their families can rely on time and again for help with life's challenges, be they big or small. In the 2021 school year, ACS served over 10,000 individuals with direct services, outreach, and education. For more information, visit their website at acs-teens.org. Good morning and welcome to 50 Shades of Hospitality. This is Crystal Cavan, your host. Today we are welcoming Kathleen Kane to our program. Welcome, Kathleen. It's a pleasure to have you on our podcast today. Can you please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yes, I have been an employee of the Galeon Institute of Higher Education for 9 years, and I continue to see students there in the role of a psychotherapist. While I was on the campus, I was teaching several courses, personal development course, psychology of leadership, and community development and service learning. I've been a paraplegic for 44 years, and that's what we're going to talk about today, travel for people with disabilities.
Yes, and I've traveled several times with you, so I can see sometimes your frustration with trying to find accessible places or places that say that they're accessible and aren't necessarily so. So you've traveled to actually many places. Do you have any favorite destinations?
Well, favorite and memorable, but favorite to start with. I would say things that are local, easy to drive to in France or in Switzerland. I'm always looking for sites of nature. Even when I go to cities, I'm always wanting to visit the local parks. And in Europe, there's a lot of beautiful, big green spaces in the middle of cities. But I like certainly in visiting cities, museums and those sorts of things, other cultural events, theater, but I'm always looking for the green spaces. So absolutely favorite destinations. Can't really say there's a favorite. It's mostly nature that I'm looking for.
And what have been maybe some of your most memorable trips?
Well, the most memorable trip was quite a number of years ago when my sister was living in Ecuador, that I went to Ecuador and we took a trip into the Amazon jungle and took a 25-mile boat ride down the Rio Napo. And that was amazing. And what made it accessible were the people. It wasn't really about the infrastructure. Apparently, what we heard after we had been there for a while is that they had held a little contest, knowing that I was coming and that I would need to be carried. They held a contest to see who could lift the most weight. Or I don't know exactly what they did to determine this, but this guy, Joaquin, he won. And he was amazing. He carried me everywhere. In fact, he carried me up 114 stairs that wound around a tree to a platform to look out over the canopy. And then we had a translator, and he carried my wheelchair on the top of his head, if you can imagine that. You put the seat on the top of your head, and the wheels are on each side of your ears, and the back is down your back. And they carried me up to the, and it was amazing. So that was an amazing, amazing trip. I was in the rainforest. I was in the Monkey Island, completely drenched. I mean, that was the people. That was the people that made it accessible. That was very memorable.
Yes, because I imagine that Ecuador may not have that many accessible hotels or restaurants. What made this so memorable? Even though it wasn't necessarily an accessible destination, it became accessible for you.
Well, that's a big theme that we can talk about today, about the different cultures and what a culture has to say, what part the culture plays in making something accessible. Again, what made it memorable is the intensity of being in nature. That's what I'm looking for in vacations. I don't know if you want to talk about the cultural piece just yet, or if you want to.
Well, actually, yeah. I mean, you didn't mention in the beginning, but I know this. You know, you're originally from California, like myself.
Right.
And you grew up in the 1970s and 80s when it became more and more accessible in the United States, in California already. You know, maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Right. I became disabled just 5 years after some major laws were passed for awareness about people with disabilities. And then in the 1990s, the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed in the early 90s. So, and I spent a good part of my early adult life in Northern California, where the Centers for Independent Living had really brought a lot of awareness. So there's some standard things that are just accessible without question. And it's a younger country. So when you're comparing it to Europe, there's just architectural barriers in Europe that are more difficult to overcome. But it's not just that. It's also governmental willingness to make it a priority. So that's the context I'm coming from, is the U.S. accessibility. And in commercial places, you know, anything that's built is always up to the Americans with Disabilities Act codes. And
you moved to Switzerland?
2006.
Right. So what was that like coming from California, from United States at that point, because you were living in the Southwest?
Yeah, in Albuquerque.
What was that like? That must have been sometimes a bit of a shock.
Well, it took a while to understand. It was. And it took a while to understand the different, there's so many different aspects. You know, in the U.S., public transportation is really most of the time fairly minimal, or in the Bay Area, there is the Bay Area Rapid Transit. But in Switzerland, the public transportation is very broad and extensive. And I've seen it improve for people with disabilities since I've been here. So there was public transportation was a bigger plus here. And then I just had to learn how the system worked. And one of the interesting things in the system of Switzerland, and it's just Switzerland, unfortunately, is something called the EuroKey. So central to all things about accessibility for people who use wheelchairs are the bathrooms. And oftentimes people are thinking about hotels or in terms of or lodging or restaurants, but key and a little bit invisible to many people is the bathroom. This is very important. So in Switzerland, they have a EuroKey that opens bathrooms all over Switzerland, mostly in the major supermarket chains, and also some lifts in different touristic areas. In Lucerne, there's a lift to bring you up to cross over the bridges. Italy tried to do that in Venice, but there was so much weather conditions and inability to keep up with all the mechanicals in that whole lift system in Venice, unfortunately, didn't work. But there's a lot of willingness in Venice to, and the boat system is pretty darn good, actually. So, and they've done some really good mapping in Venice. This is good, Crystal. I'm just, you know, as we talk, I'm remembering these different things. Venice has some very good guides. So that's one of the important things to consider, is when you make an effort to make something accessible, you also have to advertise it, or you have to make it visible or visual, or you have to inform people, because it could be accessible, but if nobody's informed, then you can't get to it.
So, Kathy, when you plan a trip, how do you go about finding an accessible hotel or a studio or an apartment? I mean, recently you confessed to me that you find the process of looking and finding an accessible hotel to be actually quite stressful. Can you explain why?
Yeah, it's rather, I feel a little bit pathetic when I run into this dilemma. And so I have to question, is it just me, or is there something larger? Something that I've seen improve, and so I use it, is booking.com. And I don't ever book through them, but I use them to find accessible places. It is discouraging when you pick your location and then you start to use the filters. And as you use the filters for accessibility, all of a sudden the numbers go from 231 to 10. and then you find out what's up with those 10. So then I find that location, I find their web address, I go look on their, I try to find them on the web, and then I have to call them directly. There's no way around not calling them directly. You can't book on Booking or any of these other platforms because you'll never know if you're booking an accessible room. So you have to take all these extra steps to make sure that it's accessible. And I did once do this. And when I arrived, there was a step up into the bathroom. Oh, but it's accessible. That's the other thing, is there's many different standards as to what accessible means. Here in Switzerland, there was a period of time they had something called Rolli Hotel, and they had an application. That's no longer in practice. So I often just use Booking. Sometimes France has some level of awareness for travel for people with disability, and they have a label, but I don't find that there's no site for the label. It's just randomly when you search an area, you might see that they're labeled for handicap tourism. That's what they call it. But that doesn't mean it's accessible for somebody in a wheelchair. That could mean a wide variety of things. So when you're talking about disability, it's very extensive. I have a good story about that, but I don't want to take up too much time. But I'll say briefly, one of the things that I enjoy besides nature is spas, going to spas in different places. And Switzerland is great for their spas. So there's a new spa that opens up. This is in Charmey. They opened up their spa. And usually I go to Lavé because it's the only one that was existing, the closest by. And so I would go there. So I went to Charmey because it's a beautiful location. And I got there and I noticed that step by step that there were things that were a little bit off, like just different. I won't go into the detail. I just thought, oh, that's differently organized. And so by the time I got in the water, before I got in the water, I was looking for the lift to get into the water and there was no lift. They said, oh, well, we'll carry you. Okay, I'm not a petite woman. And they're taking off their shoes to carry me into the water. You know, what if they slip and fall? But they were insistent, no, it's fine. We'll carry you. I'm like, God, this is so odd. So I get in the water and I'm thinking, and I'm there with my partner and I'm thinking, we're talking, we're like, there's something weird here. It's like, we're not really welcome here. There's something odd. So I get out and I find there's all these irregularities and I ask to talk to the manager. And so he sits down and talks with me and we have a half an hour conversation that was quite tense, but truthful and authentic. And basically he said, okay, sure. We have 12 handicapped parking spaces out front. We have a handicap little gate you can go through, but we're not obliged to make it accessible for people in wheelchairs. That symbol just means all disabilities. It doesn't mean a person in a wheelchair. You can go to Lavé if you want a medical center. And I said, well, I'm not sick. I'm not ill. I'm disabled. That's not the same thing. He said, well, it'd be too expensive to put in that lift. I said, yeah, but you constructed this place. You could have built it into the design. No, but you can go to Lavé. I built Lavé. It was a conscious decision to dissuade people using wheelchairs from coming to this spa. He was truthful. I appreciated that. And later on, disabilities rights group contested this, and now it's accessible. But I've never gone back. Yeah. So I gave him a little taste of what the group later on came to, which I don't even know the group. Discrimination was completely transparent. So voila.
Let's just go back to something you said before. So you said that, okay, so you can find places with filters on the booking.com, but then each time you have to call them. Why do you have to call them? What kind of questions are you asking them when you call?
Well, if I know that standards, you never know really what the standards are, but they assure me that they're wheelchair accessible. So I have to start asking questions like, how wide is the doorway? Are there bars next to the toilet? Is there a step into the shower? Do you have a shower chair? Or if it's a bathtub, do you have a transfer into the bathtub, whether it's a planche?
Bench. Yeah.
A bench, a sort of a bench. And something that that's another story. Something that I would forget to ask was, how high is the bed? And there are some places that find it really cool to put the bed really low down, like it's some kind of, like, I don't know, Japanese style. I don't know. I mean, I'm making that up, that it's Japanese to have a low bed. But, you know, the people who eat on the floor in different cultures, you know, it's like beds that are super low, it's really stylish. Well, it's like really a problem for me. Or beds that are really high. So one of my recommendations for anybody who's interested in making their accommodations more accessible is to have a simple information sheet. How wide's the door to the room? How wide's the door to the bathroom? How high is the bed? How high is the toilet? Just centimeters, just facts will make it so much easier when I call up and they have it right there. Sometimes I've said, can you take pictures? Pictures are worth 1,000 words as long as they include from floor to 3/4 of the way up to the door. I've gotten pictures that are kind of taken up into the air and then I have no context. Sometimes there's pictures. There was a hotel in Zurich and it was really, I mean, this was the most recent, literally wheelchair accessible. I get there, there's 6 stairs and I call and I say, what's going on? And she goes, oh, well, just a minute, I'll come out with the ramps, plural, not the ramp. Okay, I don't know what she's talking about. She comes out, she's this petite Russian woman with two, and she's carrying these rail-like ramps. There's 2 pieces. And so you got to put one wheel on one and one wheel on the other. And she's like, well, I can't push you up, but let's see if there's some construction workers next door. Let's see if they can. And I'm like, yeah, but what if I come back at 10 o'clock at night? Oh, well, I guess you better come back earlier. I'm like, what? I go in. Okay, the room, I can move around in it. And the bathroom is super accessible. It's one of these like prefabbed, like a whole inclusive unit. It's like one whole piece. And it's definitively wheelchair accessible. It's so small, but it's just created this way. It's like they bought it from somewhere that is labeled this. The bed's too low. And I have to come in at a certain hour, like a teenager or something. You just want to go on a trip. You just want to have some fun and not have to worry about all these details. It makes it stressful.
And one thing that I've noticed the several times that we've traveled together is that there is really no way for you to take a shower. There is no shower bench, transferable bench. There's really no way. You have to start then trying to find solutions yourself when you arrive at the hotel.
Yeah, it's rare that they have an actual real bench or chair that is made for people with disabilities. And so I'm often looking, you know, looking at their garden chairs or their deck chairs. And sometimes they'll put a little stool, like not substantial at all.
For a 4-year-old.
For a 4-year-old. Exactly. And it's like, there's no way I'm sitting on that. So, you know, it's like that, it doesn't have any solid feet at the bottom. It's looks, you know, it could just slip out from under you. And then I'm, you know, naked in the shower waiting for who? I don't know. So I'm not willing to take that risk. You know, I do a little shower up at the sink and lean my head over in the shower and wash my hair. And if it's a short trip, you know, then it's not so bad. I get home and I take a shower. I shower before I go. These kinds of things that are not ideal, but I don't want to stop it to stop me from traveling.
Yeah, and actually, if you think about it, it seems to me there's a real issue with not involving the stakeholders, with people just not saying, wait a minute, it's in our interest to have a few accessible, truly accessible hotel rooms, and then involving people who can give them really good advice about what does that mean. It seems like, oh, well, you know, they have no real experience of what this is like. They consider it to be accessible, but without really knowing.
Right. So you have people who have good intentions. They think it's good enough. They think they've got it. Somebody told them something who may have had some experience. But and that's where it becomes challenging. And yet there's some great stories of that. One of the stories of in Diablerie, Hotel à la Source, there was years ago a competition for people with disabilities. And the hotel bid to have the competition stay at their hotel. And they became aware of what the needs were and they made a commitment and they made like 6 rooms wheelchair accessible. And that's fantastic. And they consult then with people with disabilities. And usually in most major cities, there is some organization that can be available to come and see and evaluate and take into account the wide range of people with disabilities. You've got somebody in a manual wheelchair, you've got adults in power wheelchairs, you have children, and that means sizes of wheelchairs that are different. So different amount of space to be able to either turn in a 360 or different needs.
So overall, Kathy, have your traveling experiences been mostly positive or negative?
Mostly positive, but there's a lot of upfront work to do to make sure that it is. And, you know, the other thing that makes it positive is that you travel with people who are ready to help you, because there is just those moments where that help is needed. I have done some solo travel, and I've done twice to Spain, once to Madrid and then to Salamanca. Again, that's people making it accessible. That's a story. And then another time to Valencia. And Valencia was pretty seamless. And I have a bike that attaches to my wheelchair, and I took it on the plane. And when I arrived in Valencia, the bike had gotten a little bit, the adjustments got a little bit off. And the plane personnel, the crew, not the crew of the inside, but the external maintenance, you know, they found some tools and they made some adjustments for me. And that was amazing. And in Salamanca, I was getting on public transportation, and it wasn't accessible, that train. I would have had to wait a much longer time. And in my broken Spanish-French combination, communicated to a guy who was on the quay that I needed help. And he pulled somebody off the train and told him where I was getting off and told them to help me. And it's when people make it accessible that it's not just the infrastructure that makes an enormous difference.
Kathy, I'd like to go back to, you were talking about this hotel, Hotel de la Source in Les Diables Rays, their accessible hotel because of a competition with disabled athletes. Could you please tell our listeners, because you are so humble about this, but could you tell our listeners a little bit about your athletic background and, you know, your participation in the Paralympics in South Korea? What was that experience like for you, for the hotels and traveling? And so if, just tell our listeners a little bit about exactly who you are.
So
your amazing achievement.
In my, many, many years ago, I was playing wheelchair basketball and I won a spot on the U.S. women's wheelchair basketball team. And the Paralympics for the first time were held in the same location as the able-bodied Olympics. That was the first year in 1988 in Seoul, Korea. And so it was 2 weeks after. And ever since then now, they've been always held in the same place, which has raised a lot of awareness for event planners around the world at the Olympics. What does it mean to have a wheelchair accessible venue? So in Seoul, Korea, it was amazing to see how the city was transformed. They built all along the commercial storefronts these huge platforms and ramps. And it was amazing welcome that we had. But what also struck us was, and when we leave, all of the local people who are disabled have all this access. And when we leave, what happens for them? They had these enormous ramps. They didn't have wheelchair accessible buses. They had these enormous ramps up to the doors of the buses. So this is the bus stop that we all had to load and unload at. And the buses would come to this spot to pick us up and to take us. So it was an enormous logistics to make all that happen. And we were 3,000 athletes with all kinds of different disabilities, all kinds of different sports. There were quadruple amputees who were riding bikes and people pushing their wheelchairs using crutches to push the wheelchairs because they didn't have hands. It was enormously inspiring. And at the end of all of that, we won the gold medal. So that was tremendous. And that was also, I think, really where I understood from experience that travel was possible, because I traveled with my local team and then I traveled with the international team. And because I was younger and healthier and stronger, you know, I was able to do things that now at 62 are not quite as easy to do. But that many years later, there's more places that are accessible.
And the lodging in Seoul, it was also accessible. They had made the...
It's a long time ago. I can't, you know, I don't remember the details of those bathrooms, because that's what it, you know, bathrooms and the height of the bed, but it must have been okay. Hard to remember those details of lodging.
I'm sure you had a lot to think about while you were there. So my question now is, so how much is your traveling satisfaction tied in with good or bad accessibility issues?
It's definitely tied in. And I'm an adventurous person. I like to take adventures, right, Crystal? I'm ready to go for it. I'm like sometimes pushing the envelope. But when it comes to travel, you just can't go places. Like there was a bit of a dream to go to Myanmar. There's quite a strong local in Switzerland. There's a Swiss Paraplegic Association travel agency. They will plan group trips, and they have trips for everybody and anybody. And then they have trips just for quadriplegics. And it's group travel, and that's great. And I might one day do one of those, but I would prefer to travel with my family and my couple and not be on a group travel. But there are sorts of people. The previous director of the Paraplegic Foundation of Switzerland did go to Myanmar, and he did publish his trip in the magazine, but he said it was really, really difficult. And at this point in my life, I'm just not willing to put myself through those kinds of trials in order to see another country.
Tell us a little bit about what are some of the, I mean, you've already mentioned this a little bit, but what are some of the typical kinds of issues that you have to face when traveling? I mean, we've talked about, you know, accessibility and hotels, but actually, what about the whole traveling, like, you know, taking trains and planes and...
So that was one of the first things for me to understand when I came to Switzerland was, you know, how does this work? In Switzerland, they're really behind in making all of the train stations accessible. They've only made half of the train stations accessible, and they're supposed to all be accessible by the end of this year. They won't be. They have a 20-year extension. For instance, the Romont, the train station in Romont has this beautiful new ramp. It's so steep that there's no way I could get up it myself, and it would even be difficult for somebody to push me up it. So I don't know what they're thinking there. In any case, trains, planes, there's certain airline agencies that are really much more friendly to people with disabilities, and their staff is educated, basically. That's what makes the difference. It comes down to people. You can have an aisle chair, basically a transfer to a small chair that then they can push through the aisles. This aisle chair, there's a foldable one that stays on the plane. And then when I need to use the bathroom on long flights, and then on shorter flights, I really plan not to use the bathroom because it's not so easy. But there are these aisle chairs. And if people are trained to use them or not trained, it makes a big difference. They don't know where the brakes are. They don't know how to push it. They don't know what the challenges are. So when the people are trained, it makes a big difference. And so some airlines, Lufthansa, KLM, they have a good program. It's clear. The people know. Unfortunately, Swiss is not very good. They're trying. And they were very apologetic when they made some really big gaffes, but they clearly don't inform their people, educate, or make it a priority.
So when you want to take the train, for instance, here in Switzerland, that means that you have to go to a particular train station. And what we've noticed, even just recently coming back from Sicily, my husband and I noticed just getting off the train for a normal person who is not in a wheelchair is really difficult. There's a big gap. There are these little tiny steps. So how do you get onto a train here in Switzerland?
Yeah, good. First of all, you have to call an hour ahead because if you need assistance, they have to plan for the person who will assist you. Where I live, I know which trains I can be autonomous on. And so I learn which for regular routes that I take, I know which trains I can go independently. So you have to call at least an hour ahead. And if you need assistance, they have a lift, which are in Switzerland. They're all yellow and there'll be somebody there in a orange vest, and they'll load you onto the lift. And then when the train arrives, they'll pull the lift up to the train door, and then they have to jack it up to the right level, fold down the ramp, and then you're on. Hopefully they put you on the train with the wheelchair accessible bathroom, the car. So once they didn't, and it was a long train ride, and I'm like, I just got to stay on that car because the train's got to go. So I say to him, I need the bathroom. And somebody's react to this by the time I get to the next train station. So then I have the 800 number. I call them. I go, I'm not on the right car, or the bathroom's not working, or something like that. You know, and then the bathroom breaks down, and it can't walk further down the train to use the bathroom. You know, people with disability who cannot stand, people who use wheelchairs, paraplegic squad, they're constantly having to do this fluid intake moderation, which is not a healthy thing.
Very frustrating. What could hotels, restaurants, airlines, train system do to improve accessibility? What advice would you give them?
Well, let's talk about hotels first, because although there's large hotel chains, each hotel has its own particular setup for how many rooms they've made accessible. Different countries have different standards. So in the U.S., if they say it's accessible, you know it's accessible because it's up to ADA standards. There's laws. Other countries have different standards. So if every hotel could say, okay, this is our wheelchair accessible room, measure the front door, measure the bathroom door, measure the height of the toilet in the bed, and measure, this is a little more difficult, the clearance to the toilet. If you have a sink that's sticking out before the person can pass through to the toilet, that needs to be communicated. What is the space from the ground to a sitting person's shoulder level? What is the clearance between the door, the toilet, the door, the shower? If you don't have a shower chair, let people know there is no shower. There is no official shower chair. Consider that one of your garden or deck chairs could be used. But those simple measurements communicate a lot, and be willing to have a file of pictures so that you can send pictures. Now, this is just a file that could always be in place. You could educate your hotel staff. This is the file of people with reduced mobility, because it's not just people in wheelchairs. You have elderly, you have children, you have fragile ambulators of all ages. You know, are there bars around the toilet and in the shower? So measurements of doors, heights of toilet and bath and bed, bars. These are all important things. Clearance around the bed too. So maybe there's just access to one side of the bed, or maybe the furniture is movable. That was very helpful last time we traveled, Crystal. You remember that? The room was kind of small, but we could move all the furniture, and then that made it customize it. So this is not a hotel chain. This is a more boutique hotel sort of a situation. So boutique hotel, yeah, private, you know, make your furniture movable, and then that's good for people in different places. Airlines, that's a much bigger organization, you know, to make a commitment. I mean, what I've seen is that Spain has really made a commitment. The country of Spain has made a commitment to people with disabilities. And you see this particularly in the beaches, where they have a beach chair that's available. But not only the beach chair, which has very wide wheels, but somebody to push you into the water when you're done swimming, to take you out of the water. They've actually have paid people ready to assist people with disabilities on the coasts of Spain, and the equipment. And then when you want to come out of the water, they're there. This chair floats in the water. You swim up to the chair. You know, climb your way in. They pull you out, they bring you to the shower, outside shower, and then they take you to your chaise longue on a platform that's in the midst of the sand that's accessible, because sand is like the worst thing for somebody in a wheelchair. It's immovable. So Spain has made a really significant commitment. And not only that, you know, what I've seen is that I've also been to the Canary Islands. That's a really exceptional place for people with wheelchairs. Oh, the other thing I haven't mentioned at all, which is standard in the U.S., is car rentals with hand controls. This is not standard. Actually, it's very hard to come by. And I'm often traveling with somebody else, and so they do the driving. But if I'm traveling alone and I want to drive a car, that's not easy to come by in Europe. In the States, it's a given with Hertz and Avis. And yeah. But back to Spanish-speaking countries, and again, it's been Ecuador and Spain and Mexico. There's a mentality of the Spanish-speaking people. And when I taught psychology of leadership, I came to know about this in what's called pro-social behavior, that different cultures have different kinds of rules and guidelines about who's the in-group and who's the out-group in their culture. And in the Spanish-speaking culture, the decision about who will be helped is not about who's in their group. There's less lines between who's in and who's out. And it really does translate. I mean, I've had the direct experience, and I've read some other people with disabilities travel in a journalist who traveled all over the world talked about this, about how different cultures understand how to be of help. So in the Spanish-speaking cultures, they're just ready and willing and will listen. And in the sociology literature, this is called simpático in the Spanish culture. And I have experienced that directly in my different travels in Spanish-speaking countries.
So, Kathy, could you, you know, I know you have had a couple of pretty bad experiences on some airlines. Could you give us a couple of examples of why traveling on airlines has not been so easy for you?
Well, mostly it's about the bathroom. There's another story I'll tell you as well. But for instance, I knew that Swissair wasn't very friendly. And I think, and I've never actually even had the courage to fly EasyJet. Those are shorter trips, so maybe a bathroom's not needed. But on Swiss, I researched what kind of plane did they use and would there be a wheelchair accessible bathroom. And I based it on where United puts their wheelchair accessible bathroom. I decided that my seat would be there because the wheelchair accessible bathroom on United is in the middle of the plane. I'm waiting to get on the Swiss plane, and process is that I go down the jetway and I transfer to the transfer chair, and then they put me on. But there was some glitch and they got me all set up on the seat, which actually is a very hard seat. And then they said, oh, you're going to have to wait. So I'm like, well, then I have to get back in my wheelchair because I can't sit on this hard seat. I don't know how long this is going to be. Back in the wheelchair and I'm sitting and I'm waiting. All these people are streaming past. And the woman who's counting everyone coming in the door, I say, where in the plane is the wheelchair accessible bathroom? And she said in a very snotty voice, they're all accessible. And well, I knew that this wasn't the case. And so I said, no, they're not. She goes, well, we can't be taking you back and forth all trip to the bathroom. And I was aghast to hear this employee, this professional employee speaking across the doorway, other people standing around listening, that this attitude. Okay. So later I said to a gentleman who came to help me what had happened there. And he said, oh, she must have been very stressed. No need to stress out the customer because you're very stressed. But what it reflects back to me is these employees do not have information. Basic information has not been communicated. And when I made my ticket, when I was looking to schedule my ticket, I saw I had to do all this searching on the Swiss site to see where, you know, what are their standards or protocols for people with disabilities. And I tried to get through to them to find out about the plane arrangement, and I didn't get anywhere. And finally, I found out that I had to fill out a form in order to let them know that I would be traveling so that they could make sure that there was the assistance ready to board me. But very complicated scenario, no clear lines of communication and bad personnel policies. The man who did end up helping me was very apologetic and went and spoke to her and came back to me and said that he had followed through with that. And then he brought me a little coffee cup of Swiss Air full of chocolates to apologize. So I appreciated the gesture, but the other story is when I was on British Airways and they weren't pleased to let me travel by myself. In fact, I was shocked that they asked me who was traveling with me as though I was obliged to have somebody traveling with me. When I have traveled so many places in the world and back and forth across the US, never being asked if I had somebody to travel with me. And so there I was ready to get on the plane feeling like they weren't going to let me on unless I had somebody traveling with me. In fact, I did. I was just so shocked at their request that I didn't tell them the truth. And I made them scramble a little bit to find out that actually there was somebody already on the plane traveling with me, but I didn't understand this rationale. So there's not a universal traveling.
And this incident on the British Airways, I think you had mentioned before that this was, 2 weeks?
This was not long. This was like a month before they were hosting the Paralympics in London in 2012. And this was just as though, I mean, I've had, when we traveled as a team, we've had people who were as a group of very energetic people with disability in wheelchairs ask us if we all lived together in the same group home. Okay, and that was a lot of years ago. So things have changed, I believe. But the idea that people with disability would always be accompanied or always need assistance for basic, I said, look, I just need you to push the aisle chair to the bathroom. I don't need your assistance in the bathroom. So there's these questions, they're tense because they think they're going to have to lift somebody or take their clothes off or put their clothes on. And they simply just have to communicate that on the website that, if you need assistance inside the bathroom, you will have to bring somebody with you, period. It doesn't have to get delicate and embarrassing. It just has to be clearly communicated.
Yeah, and it probably would be a good idea for a lot of these employees to go to Berkeley and to visit the Center for Independent Living, because that's what it's all about, independent living.
Yeah, and none of us are 100% independent, okay? You know, that's why they come and serve you coffee and tea and drinks and, you know, if you have a need, you ask a question. And every country will have a group of people with disability who are organized to do awareness training. Hands down, no doubt, happening everywhere, especially since the UN Convention for the Rights of People with Disability was ratified by, I lost count of how many countries, over 90 different countries have ratified the convention and are looking to make people with disabilities have rights. And this is access to all things cultural, tourism, work, basic services. And Switzerland is not that high on that list.
They could do a lot better.
Especially for a country who is so wealthy. Yeah, where you've got Jamaica was the first one to ratify the convention. So people make a difference. That's the take-home message.
I just have, one more question I'd like to ask before we finish the recording. Do you think that the larger chains that are probably based in the United States but are, global hotel chains, have you stayed in those kinds of hotels? Have you noticed that those hotels that are owned by American companies that are much more sensitive to having accessible hotel rooms, do you think they do a better job?
Yeah, they do. They do. However, I'm not always looking for the big hotel chain stays. And that's, you know, I'm looking for something that's a little bit more interesting or a little bit, you know, less time in elevators down long carpeted hallways. Carpets in hotels are also oftentimes, it's gotten a little bit better, but they're not easy to roll down. And I would imagine the house cleaning staff feel it too when they're pushing the carts. These kinds of carpeted spaces that are supposedly making things luxurious and, you know, are some kind of a sound absorber are not easy to push on. So it is true that oftentimes the wheelchair accessible room is not far from the elevator. That's appreciated. But those chains are doing better. And it's, I don't know, maybe, you know, we're getting the baby boom generation of, you know, more and more elderly, fragile ambulators, more difficulty walking or wheelchair. Wheelchair users are big numbers now and have the money to travel. And so hopefully there's an understanding of smaller hotel chains or smaller or boutique or private hotels, an appreciation for creating at least one room of your lovely abode accessible would really be appreciated. So find somebody local who has some awareness. Hopefully they're part of an association of people for disabilities, so they have a little more awareness than just their own disability. And let them take a look at your spaces to see which one would be least expensive to change. It's clearly what somebody did at the place we were at last, Crystal.
All right. Thank you so much, Kathy, for joining us today to talk about this really important topic, you know, making accessible travel more accessible. And we hope to have you back as a guest to our podcast again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Crystal. And I just hope all your listeners will consider what little step they might make. I'm glad you think it's important. It certainly is important to me.
Today's episode is being sponsored by Adolescent Counseling Services, ACS, located in San Mateo County, California. ACS empowers youth in the community to find their way through social-emotional support and by building safe, accepting communities. Founded in 1975, ACS currently implements 4 core programs in Santa Clara and San Mateo County communities. Their community counseling program, which is an outpatient mental health assessment, treatment, and education for teens and their families in the general community and at local boys and girls clubs of the peninsula. Their adolescent substance addiction treatment program, a harm reduction outpatient treatment program. Their outlet program, a program serving Bay Area LGBTQ+ teens, families, and supportive allies. And their on-campus counseling program, bilingual on-site individual and family counseling. ACS provides Silicon Valley youth with direct and timely access to often life-saving professional mental health services, support, and treatment. Over the past 40 years, the agency has served hundreds of thousands of children and their family members. Adolescent Counseling Service exists to support the well-being of all teens, tweens, and young adults ages 10 to 25 in Santa Clara and San Mateo counties. ACS's network of skilled family therapists and professionally led support groups are resources that youth and their families can rely on time and again for help with life's challenges, be they big or small. In the 2021 school year, ACS served over 10,000 individuals with direct services, outreach, and education. For more information, visit their website at acs-teens.org.